the Comey memos, the second memo. The next memo is dated 1-28-17 and has the words confidential/no foreign struck out at the top of the page. I had dinner with President Trump in the green room at the White House last night at 6:30 p.m. We sat facing each other at a small oval table set for two and placed in the center of the room. There were two servers, parenthesis, who I had the chance to chat with a bit because I arrived about 10 minutes early. They were both retired Navy submariners, and we had a fun discussion about height clearances in submarines, end parenthesis. The servers were only in the room when they delivered food or retrieved plates. The conversation, which was pleasant at all times, was chaotic, with topics touched left and then returned to later, making it very difficult to recount in a linear fashion. Normally, I can recall the pieces of a conversation and the order of discussion with high confidence. Here, given the nature of it, there is a distinct possibility that, while I have the substance right, the order was slightly different. It really was conversation as jigsaw puzzle in a way, with pieces picked up, then discarded, then returned to. The president spoke an overwhelming majority of the time. He never asked me an open-ended question or left it to me to choose a topic of conversation. There were almost no periods of silence during the 1 hour and 20 minutes, except once or twice when the president paused as the servers entered. I felt comfortable throughout, although never relaxed, given the focus conversation required. At various times, he talked about the inauguration and crowd size, the campaign, and his effective use of free media, parenthesis, quote, earned media, end quote, end parenthesis. The extraordinary luxury of the White House, parenthesis, which he favorably compared to Mar-a-Lago, end parenthesis. His many activities during the day and week, his young son's height, the viciousness of the campaign, parenthesis, where I interjected about Adams and Jefferson. He said he had been given a book about it, which was upstairs, end parenthesis. How he had not been mocking a handicapped reporter, had not assaulted any of the women who claimed he did, parenthesis, reviewing in detail several of the allegations, end parenthesis, and many other things. I will attempt to recount in some detail only those parts that related in some way to my work. He touched on my future at various points. The first time he asked, quote, so what do you want to do, end quote, explaining that lots of people wanted my job, parenthesis, quote, about 20 people, end quote, end parenthesis, that he thought very highly of me and had heard great things, that the people of the FBI really liked me, but he would understand if I wanted to walk away given all I had been through, although he thought that would be bad for me personally because it would look like I had done something wrong, that he, of course, can make a change at the FBI if he wants, but he wants to know what I think. There was no acknowledgement by him or me that we had already talked about this twice. I responded by saying that he could fire me any time he wished, but that I wanted to stay and do a job I love and think I am doing well. I explained that I never expected to be back in government, but had found this job hugely rewarding and wanted to serve out my term. I added that I was reliable in one way, but not in the way political people sometimes use the term. I explained that he could count on me to always tell him the truth. I said, I don't do sneaky things. I don't leak. I don't do weasel moves. But I was not on anybody's side politically and could not be counted on in that traditional political sense, which I said I thought was in the president's best interest. He asked whether the FBI leaks, and I answered that, of course, in an organization of 36,000, we were going to have some of that. But I said, I think the FBI leaks far less than people often say. I predicted he, like all presidents, would discover the entire government leaks like crazy, and explained that it often comes from the first or second hop out from those actually working on the sensitive thing. He replied that he needed loyalty and expected loyalty. I did not reply or even nod or change my facial expression, which he noted because we came back to it later. The conversation then swerved into a long discussion of the email investigation, parenthesis, which we returned to at least once more, end parenthesis. This was where I spoke the most and laid out for him my thinking, with frequent interruption, in a manner similar to my discussions with Senators Feinstein and Grassley during our one-on-ones. The one detail I added was about the AG directing me not to use the word investigation. He knew the sequence of events extremely well, breaking them down in his lexicon into Comey 1, Comey 2, and Comey 3 developments, and he walked through how he saw each played out during the campaign, in great detail. He asked whether it was true there was a revolt after Comey 1. I said that was nonsense, and I had worked hard to see if folks had concerns. I added that I surely didn't need to tell him that the media sometimes gets stuff wrong. I explained that the investigators all agreed there was no case. He said he disagreed and thought there was a case. He asked me at several points how I had held up under all the abuse. I explained the freedom that comes from doing the right thing in the right way, surrounded by people who are helping make the decisions in the same way. At this point, he asked me, parenthesis and asked again later, end parenthesis, whether, quote, your guy McCabe, end quote, has a problem with me, explaining that, quote, I was pretty rough on him and his wife during the campaign, end quote. I explained that Andy was a true professional and had no problem at all. I then explained what FBI people were like, that whatever their personal views, they strip them when they step into their bureau roles and actually hold, quote, political people, end quote, in slight contempt, without regard to party. At about this point, he asked me to compare A.G. Holder and A.G. Lynch. I said I thought A.G. Holder was smarter and more sophisticated and smoother than A.G. Lynch, who I added is a good person. He said Holder and President Obama were quite close. I replied that they were, and it illustrated, in my view, a mistake presidents make over and over again. Because they reason that problems for a president often come from justice, they try to bring justice close, which paradoxically makes things worse, because an independent Department of Justice and FBI are better for a president and the country. I listed off John Mitchell, Ed Meese, and Al Gonzalez as examples of this mistake, and he added Bobby Kennedy. At about this point, he turned to what he called the, quote, golden showers thing, end quote, and recounted much of what he had said previously on that topic. He repeated that it was a complete fabrication and, quote, fake news, end quote. I explained again why I had thought it was important that he know about it. I also explained that one of the reasons we told him was that the media, CNN in particular, was telling us they were about to run with it. He said it bothered him if his wife thought there was even a 1% chance it was true in any respect. He said he had spoken to people who had been on the Miss Universe trip with him, and they had reminded him that he didn't stay overnight in Russia for that. He said he arrived in the morning, did events, then showered and dressed for the pageant at the hotel, parenthesis, he didn't say the hotel name, end parenthesis, and left for the pageant. Afterwards, he returned only to get his things because they departed for New York by plane that same night. He said he thought maybe he should ask me to investigate the whole thing to prove it was a lie. I did not ask any questions. I replied that it was up to him, but I wouldn't want to create a narrative that we were investigating him because we are not, and I worried such a thing would be misconstrued. I also said that it is very difficult to disprove a lie. He said, quote, maybe you're right, end quote, but several times asked me to think about it and said he would also think about it. We returned to the topic of my job, and in response to his question, I explained how I had ended up with the position and that I had been pleasantly surprised that President Obama thought of the role the way I did. He wanted competence and independence and didn't want the FBI involved in policy. He wanted to be able to sleep at night knowing the FBI was well run. The president then spoke again about being glad I wanted to stay. He said Mattis said great things about me, as did Sessions. He explained he had asked a lot of people about me and heard great things. He then returned to loyalty, saying, quote, I need loyalty, end quote. I replied that he would always get honest from me. He paused and said that's what he wants, quote, honest loyalty, end quote. I replied, quote, you will get that from me, end quote. (parenthesis). It is possible we understood that phrase differently, but I chose to understand it as consistent with what I had said throughout the conversation. I will serve the president with loyalty to the office, the country, and the truth. I decided it would not be productive to push the subject further. (parenthesis). At about this point, he asked again about, quote, your guy McCabe, end quote, and whether he was, quote, going to be okay, end quote. I again affirmed Andy's ability and professionalism and said the president would come to see and benefit from both. He then asked who I thought I should deal with, and he suggested Reince Priebus. I explained that in the prior administration, my White House contacts were with the chief of staff or the people in Mike Flynn's job and Tom Bossert's job. He said, quote, Reince doesn't know we are having dinner, end quote, but he will tell him and that I should deal with Reince. He then went on to explain that he has serious reservations about Mike Flynn's judgment and illustrated with a story from that day, which the president apparently discovered during his toast to Theresa May that, redacted, had called 4 days ago. Apparently, as the president was toasting PM May, he was explaining that she had been the first to call him after his inauguration, and Flynn interrupted to say that, redacted, had called, parenthesis, first, apparently, end parenthesis. It was then that the president learned of redacted's call, and he confronted Flynn about it, parenthesis, not clear whether there was in the moment or after the lunch with PM May, end parenthesis. Flynn said that the return call was scheduled for Saturday, which prompted a heated reply from the president that 6 days was not an appropriate period of time to return a call from the redacted of a country like redacted, parenthesis. This isn't redacted we are talking about, end parenthesis. He said that if he called redacted and didn't get a return call for 6 days, he would be very upset. In telling the story, the president pointed his fingers at his head and said, quote, the guy has serious judgment issues, end quote. I did not comment at any point during this topic, and there was no mention or acknowledgement of any FBI interest in or contact with General Flynn. As we got up, he said, we should have my family back for dinner. When I didn't reply, he added, quote, or a tour, whatever you think is appropriate, end quote. As we stepped from the green room, he said, quote, Reince knows we are having dinner, end quote, parenthesis, the opposite of what he had said earlier, end parenthesis. Quote, deal with him, I will tell him, end quote. He then walked me into the East Room. I said I had been there before when President Obama held a big dinner for senior staff and appointees around Christmas. We then shook hands and parted. JBC 128-17. End of memo.